The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to cause trouble.
Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything. All right, Farrell on the bench on a pain-free Friday with you. So Mark Berman was the guy that did the story in the New York Post, and I'm friends with Mark. He's cool. I respect him. But he basically wrote, if point guard Chris Paul makes his way to the Knicks via a trade, sources have said Anthony's likely to want to follow. Anthony and Paul are close friends and have dreamed of playing together on an NBA team. Both have been represented by Knicks president Leon Rose when he was the head of CAA in terms of basketball chief. A source said that Rose is into having Anthony return even without Paul. The Knicks have expressed interest in Paul. The Thunder are looking to move the veteran as they continue their rebuild. He averaged 17, 6, and 5. Obviously, we know what he did in Portland. Melo, I thought he was incredible. Now, I'm not doing this story because this is some kind of like, you know, we're talking about the Knicks on a, you know, night when the Dodgers are playing in a must-win game and there's tons of college football tomorrow and NFL on Sunday. It's just that it's simple, is that Chris Paul, there's been talk of him going to the Knicks. We've heard it before. We're hearing it again. And now we're hearing if he goes to the Knicks, then the Knicks want Melo back. And then Melo and CP want to play together. And look, if Melo came to the Knicks and dropped 15 a game like he did for Portland and Chris Paul was dropping those numbers, which, you know, I doubt he'll drop on the Knicks. The Knicks are, they're a disaster. So I think the Thunder are better than the Knicks without a doubt, right? So like the Thunder make the playoffs and they're tough. The Knicks don't make anything except losses. That's what they make. They make like losses, like they make bagels in New York. Okay, so the bottom line is that if he could give them 15 a game and six or seven dimes and three or four boards every single night with Melo giving him 15, and then the leadership that those two would give the kids like RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson and what they have, I think that the team would actually have something at least worth seeing, worth watching, and maybe it'll come to fruition.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
All right, Pharrell on the bench with you. So the Dodgers down 2-1 to the Braves in the sixth. Runner at first, nobody out. Seager's up. And, of course, he already hit one out. So that got him on the board. They were down 2-0 in this game. Astros have already won, forcing a game seven tomorrow. Morton is definitely going for the Rays. Looks like McCullers. I could be wrong. For the Astros, see if we can shore that up before the end of the show. But Dodgers have to, you know, they got to score. I mean, they're down a run, and it could have been worse. Remember, Ozuna scored that run, but they nailed him, leaving the bag early at third on the great shoestring catch by Betts. All right, we bring in our college football insider, good friend, Jerry Hinnan. He's been on the bench forever. And we always love talking college football with Jerry, and particularly on Friday nights over the years. And we bring him in now on the bench to talk about just that. How you doing, Jerry?
I am doing great, Scott. College football, you know, it's hanging in there. We got some really, really great games this weekend. Obviously, the big one with Georgia and Alabama. I think tomorrow we've had some great Saturdays. The last few weeks, like the noon slate, especially last week, with just the points explosions in every direction, was a high point. It's like, okay, this is what it's supposed to be like. This is college football. We've got it. You know, things suck in so many directions right now, but we've got this. And I'm really expecting, hoping for another really, really great Saturday tomorrow.
Well, I'm sure we'll get it. Let me start by asking you about, do you feel that after Saban passed that test on Thursday, and then I'm sure today as well, that he's got any chance at all of coaching in that game against Georgia tomorrow? Do you know any news about whether or not he's going to be able to do it? Because all week long, late in the week at least, people were under the assumption that he would not be coaching.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the SEC's protocols. Like, they put out a document in August that said basically, like, here's what we're going to do in the event that a coach, I know, and I think a player too, test positive. Then they have a second test. Okay, so Saban tested positive. This was on Wednesday. Second test Thursday came back negative. If that happens, then they test again 24 hours later. If that also comes back negative, then you get a third test after that. So that test would be tomorrow, I'm assuming. I haven't seen a very specific timeline for this, but I assume – you know, we're talking about Alabama football. We're talking about Nick Saban. It's going to be pretty early in the morning since we've got, you know, the game of the season slightly later on in the afternoon. If that comes back negative, according to SEC protocols, they would assume the first positive test would have been a false positive and he would be cleared to coach. You know, so we're kind of talking about, like, how fast can we get the test done? How fast does the result come back? All this sort of stuff. Again, I assume we're talking about Alabama football. This will all be executed as quickly as possible. So we're talking about, well, what are the chances that his first test was a false positive and then that these two, or excuse me, was a real positive, and then these two follow-up tests have been false negatives, that the testing has basically been wrong, you know, if the first one was a false positive, what does it say that Bill Byrne, the Alabama athletic director, who also tested positive at the same time with his, you know, positive also false? It's an extremely confusing situation. I am not an epidemiologist, Jim. I am a football dude. So, you know, I'm not sure what would happen. I am leaning, though, towards Nick Saban actually coaching this game. You know, I think we all understand that if Saban gets that third negative and the SEC protocols say that it's okay for him to go out on that field with his team, you know, not just for like any old, I mean, he probably would be out there if they were playing Kent State, but they're not playing Kent State. They're playing Georgia. If there's any way for him to be on the field, I think we know he is going to be on the field. You know, again, I don't know. I have no idea what the odds are that the test was a false positive and that these other ones are correct. But, you know, at this point, after these couple of negatives, I would lean in the direction of him, you know, more likely coaching tomorrow than not would be my extremely uneducated guess.
Well, do you think, like, if he were to, let's say, if he were to not coach and it was Sarkisian, who do you like in that game? And then if he does coach, who do you like in the game?
Yeah, man, it's so tricky because Alabama's problems right now are not on the offensive side of the ball. Steve Sarkisian's side of the ball is doing great. Gained 95% of their possible yardage against Ole Miss last week. Every drive they had ended in a touchdown except for one that ended on the Ole Miss 40 and one they fumbled on the one-yard line. They gained more than 600 yards. They only left 41 possible yards on the field. Like, they either drove to the end zone or they left, like I said, those two drives that ended short. So 95% of the possible yards that Alabama could have gotten against Ole Miss last week, they got. That's how good that offense is playing right now. But that's almost how bad their defense played. Lane Kiffin's offense chewed them up. I could not believe that I was watching an Alabama defense that, you know, it wasn't even putting up resistance at times. Like, it was easy for the Rebels. Now, we got to give, you know, Lane Kiffin some credit. First of all, I'm sure he pulled out every trick that he had, like every bit of knowledge that he had about Alabama's defense. That game was obviously very important to Lane Kiffin. And Ole Miss has a lot of talent on that side of the ball. They hung up 42 points at Kentucky the week before. Kentucky's got a good defense. That's a strong offense that Lane Kiffin's coaching. That still shouldn't happen to an Alabama defense. So my question is, if Nick Saban's not on the sideline, if he cannot adjust in the middle of the game, in a game this big, the way he would like to, because, you know, he cannot communicate with his coaches, et cetera, you know, how does that affect Alabama? Part of me wants to say, you know what? This is such a well-run program. Nick Saban is so detail-oriented. He has run through so many possibilities with his team. Missing practice this week, I don't think probably affected them all that much. He was there via Zoom. He probably had one of these Arrested Development type surrogates with a guy, you know, with a microphone who he's just telling what to say. You know, I don't think it probably hurt them at practice very much. But in the heat of a game, if he's not there, I think it's going to hurt their defense. And it doesn't look like their defense can be hurt right now. I don't think they can afford that. You know, I think this is going to be a very close, very competitive game. And, you know, my instinct is to say that whether Saban is on the sideline or not may have that exact material impact. If we say that he's going to have a one possession difference, it's a 3-point difference, it's maybe a one touchdown difference, whether he's on there or not, that could decide this ball game.
So just so we're clear, Betts just got caught in a rundown between second and third. And the bottom line is they still got the runner or they still got the batter to second while Betts was going back and forth between second and third of the rundown. They eventually got him out. There's two outs now, and they still have a runner at second, and they're going to change pitchers. And it's top of the sixth, two outs, runner at second. Muncy's going to be up. We're talking to Jerry Hinnan. We'll talk about the rest of the action in college football on Saturday and keep you updated on this BYU-Houston game that's going on right now in Houston. Last time I checked, Houston was up 17-14. We'll give you an update on that and talk about all these games tomorrow with Jerry.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're all back with you on the bench. Jerry Hinnan's talking college football with us. Jerry, what do you think the Pac-12 and Big Ten are thinking, watching, you know, the SEC have all these COVID positives and teams having problems, Saban, you know, what he went through this week, and Ole Miss, and they've all had, they're starting to have problems left and right, and what do you think, like, Larry Scott and these guys like Kevin Warren, you know, that run these two conferences are thinking about their decision to, you know, decide to play football after they had decided that they weren't going to play football at all. And then all the pressure that they got, they buckled.
I think they're probably thinking the schedule is not going to work. I mean, the Big Ten's, you know, try to play, what, 10 games in 10 weeks, something like that. I don't think they have any buys built into their schedule. I think they are planning on playing games during championship week. Like, the championship game is going to go off with the two division winners, and then I think the other teams are going to play games for God only knows what reason. But I think that's, like, the, if I'm not mistaken, that's the only leeway they've got built into their schedule. I don't understand why they didn't just play in the spring. Like, if you want to have a football season, I understand that. Like, obviously, we all love football. We all want to reward, you know, the kids who want to play, all of that. You have to make that decision, either play in the spring or play in the fall, in a way. They tried to thread the needle, basically, where they said, well, we're going to try and wait until, you know, we see if we can do it in the fall. And then we're going to suddenly, you know, say, yeah, we're going to do it this fall. Instead of, like, waiting to the spring, even though we were going to wait to the spring, we've changed our mind. That timeline doesn't work, and we're seeing why right now. Like, yes, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, we've had testing improvements. We can now test daily. They've got the money to test, you know, God knows how many times, which we're seeing there's more problems in the group of five game, you know, conferences, more cancellations, more postponements because, you know, probably the money is not there to test as frequently as there is in the SEC, the Big 12, et cetera. But, you know, it's not like Florida and LSU is postponed for this week. It's not like Florida and LSU don't have the money to test, you know, every hour on the hour if they really want to. You know, I don't know if the capacity nationally is there for testing like that, but if they could, they would. That's how much money they have. The Big 10 and the Pac-12 are not going to be able to test any more frequently, any better than LSU and Florida are testing right now. And LSU and Florida got postponed anyway. We're already seeing, you know, unfortunately, another, it seems like another COVID surge is coming our way. Wisconsin, in the Midwest is one of the states that is being hardest hit right now. Cold weather, you know, the Dakotas are also being hit. Cold weather seems like it might have a factor in this. I don't see how the Big Ten is going to make this work unless they just end up playing a 7 or 8 game season. I think they had to choose one or the other. They had to play in the fall and announce that in August, or they had to play in the spring. They tried to thread the needle. I don't think it's going to work in the sense that they're going to be able to play a complete season. I think they'll play some games. They'll play 5, 6, maybe 7. But a complete season, the way they have it scheduled right now, I don't think is going to work.
You know, I saw Indiana, my alma mater, had they're like $60 million in the hole already. Their athletic department, that they're losing money left and right. Houston up at the half, 20-14 over BYU. All right, Jerry, let's and SMU won in overtime over Tulane, 37-34 on the road, and they are 5-0, I believe. Is that about right? Or are they 6-0 now? I think they're 5-0.
No, yeah, SMU's they're undefeated. I don't know if it's 4 or 5, but they're undefeated.
All right, so tomorrow there's, you know, really they've postponed a lot of games, but there are still some really good games now. We've already talked about Alabama. The game that I like, that I think is going to stand out above all the others in terms of being crazy, is that UCF game with Memphis at Memphis. By the way, the Dodgers just hit a huge home run, and they've taken the lead on the Braves. Will Smith, it's now 4-2 Dodgers in the sixth. So they got a bunch of runners on. I think this guy just jacked a three-run homer is what it was, and it's 4-2 now. They were down. Smith threw it to Smith. So Smith the reliever, Smith the hitter, and he jacked it to deep left field, a three-run blast to give the Dodgers a lead. And boy, did they need that, because they're facing elimination, and suddenly they've woken up. All right, so UCF and Memphis in Memphis. I like that game a lot. What do you think, Jerry?
I think it's going to be a fantastic game. 2 years ago, UCF was coming off the undefeated season. They were the favorites. Memphis lost to them by a single point in the regular season. They went, I want to say, into overtime or into the dying moments in the championship game of the American that season. UCF won again. I think that really stuck in Memphis's craw. Those were two absolutely heartbreaking losses against the team that at that point was the class of the league. Memphis did win the conference last season, but they did not get to play UCF. Like, they weren't on the schedule because of the cross division thing. And then UCF didn't even make the, you know, American championship game. It ended up being Cincinnati last year that they played. So this game, I think, has been circled on Memphis's schedule for a long, long time. Brady White is their quarterback. He's very, I mean, every quarterback, it seems like, that comes through Memphis is really good. Brady White is another one. They've always got skill. I think they're going to get this one. I think they've got it circled. UCF, you know, Josh Heupel's a great coach. They've always got a lot of that overlooked talent from Florida. But that loss to Tulsa a couple of weeks ago, Tulsa, that's a team they really ought to beat. Like, UCF has more talent than Tulsa, so they still lost that game. Memphis lost a tough one, I think, to SMU. But I think this is really one that Memphis is going to want. I think there's going to be a ton of points scored. Like I said, these were instant classics when they played 2 years ago. And I absolutely agree. If there is one game you would want to, like, kind of take the time out to watch that wasn't Georgia-Alabama, I think you could do a lot worse than Memphis UCF.
So Miami and Pitt at the Hard Rock in South Florida, and it was 13.5 at one point or another with Miami favored over Pitt. I've said this a few times this week. I remember when Miami beat Notre Dame at the Hard Rock and blew them out in front of a packed house, and then they went to Pittsburgh the next week and got beat by Pitt. Pitt's always given Miami problems. Are they going to give them problems again tomorrow night? I guess
it's
tomorrow afternoon.
It's a noon or Eastern, 11 a.m.
Right.
Central. I think Miami's going to win this game. I think this is a great test for Manny Diaz. You know, Miami, obviously, they lost to Clemson last week. They weren't close to beating Clemson, but nobody comes close to beating Clemson. Like, that's really not a shame. So the question is, does that loss, how do they respond to it? Are they hungover? Do they say, you know, crud, our regular, you know, our undefeated season's ruined, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or do they come back and say, all right, we're angry. We're going to show that that one game doesn't define our season. And this is where Manny Diaz is going to earn his money, because, as you point out, Pitt, is one of these teams that will lose to anybody at any time, but they also will beat anybody at any time. I think we remember the Clemson game from a few years ago. 13.5 points. It seems like a lot for, just your standard sort of ACC coastal game. But I do think Miami's going to win this game. De'Aaron King was, I feel like he's the quarterback Miami's been looking for a while. Like, that is the guy who will make plays, who can put an offense on his back and do things that the quarterbacks we've seen in Coral Gables the last few years have just not been able to do. I think Rhett Lashley was a great hire. You know, I watched him call plays at Auburn for a long time, and if you give him a quarterback as dynamic as De'Aaron King, he's going to be able to make some things happen. We saw that in the Louisville game. I honestly think Louisville's a little bit better than their record right now. I think they can give Notre Dame a game this weekend. I don't know if Miami's going to cover the 13.5. This looks like a 10-13, right in that range game for me, as long as Diaz has them ready to play. But I think he will. I think they're off to a good start. I think Miami should still have that confidence that we saw at the beginning of the year. I love De'Aaron King. I do think they're going to win that game.
So do you think the Kentucky-Tennessee game is going to be better? Or do you think the, I'd be willing to say the A&M-Mississippi State game, I'd throw out there as on paper looks like a good game. Which one do you think is going to be better, that Kentucky game with Tennessee or the A&M-Mississippi State game? I got 90 seconds, respectfully.
All right. I would watch the UK-Tennessee game. I love Kentucky's offense. It is the old school. It is run. Terry Wilson, the quarterback, is a dynamic player. The other thing is, I don't think Mississippi State's going to be able to hang with Texas A&M at all. Mike Leach, it takes him time. Whether it was Washington State, Texas Tech, he did great things in those places, but it took him time to get everybody up to speed. Yes, they beat LSU. KJ Costello had 8 million yards, but LSU's defense is an atrocious. It is a train wreck right now. Like, Ed Orgeron himself called it an embarrassment. I think you got to kind of throw that out the window. I think the 2 points that they scored, so basically zero for the offense last week at Kentucky, I think is a better indicator. Texas A&M may still have a little bit of their hangover from beating Florida, but I don't think Mississippi State's going to be competitive in that game. I really like Kentucky's defensive line against Tennessee's offensive line. Those are two very good units. I think Kentucky-Tennessee is going to be a very good game. I would lean towards Kentucky with the 6.5 in that one.
All right, so there's a lot of other good games I'll talk about in a little bit with you on the show. Jerry, great stuff. We'll catch up in a week, maybe two at most, and get you back on the bench and talk more college football. Enjoy all the games tomorrow, all right?
It's going to be an awesome day.
All right, there he is, Jerry Hinnon, our good friend, college insider on the bench. Dodgers with the lead now, 4-2 over the Braves. In the bottom of the sixth, nobody out, nobody on. So I was talking to him about A&M and Mississippi State or whatever and comparing it to like Kentucky and Tennessee. The game that I really think will be better than both of those games, believe it or not, and I think I'm right about UCF and Memphis being the best game of the day, BC and Virginia Tech and Blacksburg. I know that's a big line, 13, Vatek heavy favorites. I just have this feeling that's going to be a game in Blacksburg, and I think it'll be better than that. I really do. I think, Vatek's going to win the game. I took BC in the points. I got him at 11. If it's at 13, I like him even more. So just in terms of all the games, like FIU and Charlotte, Florida International at Charlotte postponed, Vandy at Missouri postponed, Southern Miss, UTEP postponed, Oklahoma State, Baylor postponed, LSU, Florida postponed, Cincinnati, Tulsa postponed, expired. but here's the rest of them. Notre Dame and Louisville at 2:30 on NBC. Notre Dame lands 16 and a hook. I like the Irish there. Clemson and Georgia Tech in Atlanta. Bobby Dodd, Clemson land 27. They got to win by 4 touchdowns. Not going to be easy. I'm willing to try it, though. I just do not believe Georgia Tech. If you think Miami had problems against Clemson. What do you think Georgia Tech's going to have against Clemson? I don't care where they play the game. I think Miami will win. Pitt will cover. Auburn and South Carolina, that game's at noon at Williams-Brice in Columbia. Auburn's laying 3, tough place to play. Going to the 7th now, 4-2 Dodgers. Dodgers coming up. Kentucky and Tennessee in Knoxville at Neyland, and it's Tennessee laying 6.5. I got it at 6. I think it's, you know, I took Tennessee and laid it. I think it's a dangerous way to make a living right there. Navy and East Carolina. I took Navy. I laid 2. Texas State and South Alabama. I took South Alabama. I got it at 2. Now it's 3.5. South Florida and Temple. Temple, I got it at 10. Now it's 13. Everybody pounced on it at 10. Liberty and Syracuse in Syracuse. Liberty laying 2.5. I like Liberty. I got them at 3.5 and laid it. 2.5's even better. West Virginia laying 21.5 to Kansas. I like West Virginia there. Army and Texas San Antonio. I like the 8 spot with Texas San Antonio to cover. Army to barely beat them. They might even lose that game. UAB and Western Kentucky. I saw this game too. UAB and Western Kentucky. I know I put that game up. Oh, there it is. I like UAB, and I took Western Kentucky on the road with the 13 and a hook with the points. The Hilltoppers. Duke and NC State. I had NC State laying the 4.5 against Duke. In that UCF-Memphis game, I got it at Memphis getting 3.5. Now it's 2.5. I like it a lot better at 3.5. Central Florida going to have a hard time tomorrow in Memphis. I like Central Florida to win, but not cover the 3.5. And then Ole Miss and Arkansas. I like Ole Miss laying 1.5 at Fayetteville. I mean, if you can put up 600 yards on Alabama and change, how can you not go to Fayetteville and win? I mean, honestly. If you put that kind of a beating on Alabama and that defense of Nick Saban's, how do you not go beat Arkansas? And I've heard all this I can take. Arkansas is playing really well this year and everything else. I don't care how well they're playing. They're not playing anywhere near what Alabama is. And Ole Miss put a number on them. I mean, they just rung them up. They didn't win, but they gave them nothing but problems. So they should beat Arkansas. It's that simple. Eastern Kentucky and Troy. Troy laying 28. I got it at 27.5. I think they'll cover. A&M and Mississippi State. I took A&M, but I got 6.5 with Mississippi State. Now it's 5. You know, I mean, 5's dangerous. I got to tell you, I actually think A&M might cover the 5, but not 6.5. Fair enough. Georgia Southern laying 31 to UMass. I got it at 28, and I like it at 28. 31, you're starting to get sketchy. Virginia at Wake, the Cavs at Wake, and Virginia is laying 1.5. I got it at 2.5 when it opened. I like Wake to beat them at home. And then Middle Tennessee laying 6 to North Texas. I think Middle Tennessee wins, but North Texas covers the number. I got it at 7. Marshall and Louisiana Tech. Marshall laying 13.5. I actually like Louisiana Tech with the 14 that I got when it opened. It's 13.5. I still like it at 13.5. Look, they're 3-1. They're at home. Marshall's better. Marshall should win. I don't think they beat them by 2 touchdowns. I really don't. North Carolina, Florida State. North Carolina laying 13.5. I got it at 13. I like North Carolina to do whatever they want to Florida State. And then all those other games got postponed. I'm just looking at, there you go. I gave you every game that I'm doing in terms of college football tomorrow. Everything else has been postponed. So anyway, they're in the third quarter now. It's Houston 20-14. BYU's moving the ball. They're over midfield. They're at the Houston 46, but it's 3rd and 15. That's what I'm seeing. and it's BYU down 6 to Houston early in the third. SMU already beat Tulane 37-34 on the road, and SMU's unbeaten. They win it in overtime, so that was a huge. Last night, Arkansas State beat Georgia State in a wild game, 59-52. I thought Georgia State made some stupid calls at the end, the third and fourth down bombs, when they were, it was third and five and fourth and five, and you're throwing bombs on both of them, like 35-yard, 40-yard passes down the sideline on both third and fourth down. What are you doing, bro? You're moving the ball the whole game, and all you need to do is keep moving the ball and go down and score and send the game into overtime. Instead, you throw two bombs back-to-back. How bad was that? I just don't understand that. You need 5 yards. You don't need 40. What are you doing, bro? I thought the head coach, offensive coordinator, whoever made those calls, cost them the game. They led that game. They were in that game the entire game. They were in that game. I had Arkansas State, but I still thought in terms of I think I had Georgia State with the 3.5. They didn't cover, but I had Arkansas State winning. And I hit SMU and Tulane both ways. I hit Coastal Carolina on Wednesday night with that 7 spot. So Coastal Carolina beat Louisiana on the road 30-27. That was Wednesday night. Thursday night, last night, was the Arkansas State-Georgia State game. And tonight we've seen SMU win in overtime and BYU, obviously, down 6 right now. So I don't know what happened. They had a flag or something. They're in midfield. I think they got a procedure, delay a game or something. I haven't been watching. I'm on the Dodgers, Braves, still 4-2 Dodgers in the 7th. They're up. And now I switched on the football game, but they're in a break. So we know what's going to happen in terms of this one. I still want to get your opinion, Mafia. I know you told me on the show you like Lomachenko, but tomorrow night, I just think it's phenomenal that that fight is on ESPN and you can actually watch it, because to me, that's a pay-per-view fight for sure. I know tonight I started watching the Tank Davis, Leo Santa Cruz, Showtime special, you know, countdown, 24 hours, whatever the hell they call it, getting ready for their fight on Halloween in San Antonio at the Alamo Dome. That is going to be a great fight, as the Money Team, Mayweather Promotions, Gervonta Davis taking on, no joke, badass Leo Santa Cruz. Both of these guys are champions and they mean business. And then, you know, those are two great fights back to back. And then Spence, Danny Garcia in Dallas at Jerry's World. This is craziness, but who do you like tomorrow? Lomachenko, you said you think that he's going to win the fight. I'm going with Lopez in a massive upset. He's plus 330. I think Lomachenko is an absolute ruthless killer. There's no denying he's incredible talent. I think he can win every fight he fights. I think it's hard to bet against him ever. I've never bet against him once ever. And I'm going to bet against him tomorrow. I'm just going to take a chance with that pie being that big at 330. And you're talking about a dangerous character in Lopez. This guy is no joke. He's evil. He knocks people out and he's violent and he's crazy and he wants a piece of this guy. Now, be careful what you wish for, Mafia, but I think Lopez is going to be the toughest fight Lomachenko's ever had. I could be wrong. Lomachenko says he wants to go 12 rounds and just mess with him and beat his ass for 12 rounds. He doesn't even want to finish him off early. He wants to go the distance and make him suffer. I don't think he's going to make Lopez suffer. I really don't. I think Lopez is too dangerous.
Yeah, I don't think it's about suffering. I think it's about that he knows how powerful the kid is. And if he goes in there and looking to get the knockout and try to beat him down and try to play his game, he knows he's not going to win that fight. You know, the fight that he needs to fight is not the one of getting in there and slugging it out. You don't want to get in a phone booth. He needs to use that great footwork he has and dance a little bit. He needs to move, get in there, get some points, get back out, before the kid hits him. He needs to frustrate this kid and make sure that he doesn't get the shots that he wants to get off on Lomachenko, because he's got nice power. He's got nice pop. He's a little younger, a little stronger. I think Lomachenko knows that the way for him to fight this is not to try to beat him down, but to try to drag it out and outpoint him, because that's the safest bet for him, instead of getting in a phone booth and letting this kid pummel him.
So tell people what you're going to do in this UFC card tomorrow night in terms of, I know your picks will all be on ForellOnTheBench.com, but in that main event, Zombie against Ortega.
Yeah, I'm going Zombie in this one. It's a hard one because Ortega is a guy who's only lost one fight ever, and it was against Max Holloway for the title 2 years ago. So it's not like this guy has ever been there and had a lot of, stuff. He has to come back from a lot of losses. You know, he's as opposed to, you know, next week's headliner and Gaethje, who's had a bunch of losses to guys because he would just go in there and brawl. Ortega's a guy who's a very good fighter, was undefeated before just getting beat down by Holloway, but he's a tough guy. He didn't call out in that fight. The doctors stopped it after four rounds. He wanted to keep going, even though he was getting beaten down more than most people should or most people could. The thing, though, is for me, he switched camps, and now the only coach he had that's been around him for a long time, one of the Gracies, can't go because he tested positive for COVID. You're going halfway across the world after pretty much 2 years off because they were supposed to fight this fight last year, and he had a knee injury. So you're coming off the beatdown. You're coming off a knee injury after that. You're coming with new coaches. I just think, you know, everything's a little easier for Korean Zombie right now as far as he's going to travel less distance. He's got the people he's used to being with, and he's going to fight his fight. He's a good counterpuncher. He's going to let Ortega come at him and, you know, just try to beat him up for a couple rounds. It's a five-round fight, so that adds to the damage you're going to take too. So I'm going with the Korean Zombie, even though Ortega is a guy who's a great fighter. Korean Zombie's the favorite. And then after that, we're going to have to see where it goes from there because I'm also going to go Korean Zombie plus 160. On the card, FanDuel Sportsbook has plus 160 as the odds boost on Zombie getting the knockout KO. Other fights, I might not have done that a three-round fight, but being that it's a five-round fight, I'm going to give him the credit that those extra rounds are going to add to, you know, him getting more shots in there and end up taking out Ortega. And then after that, is you got Andrade versus Chookagian. Chookagian's a bigger fighter in this. Despite Andrade going down in this weight class from where she used to be, Chookagian's going to be about 8 inches taller. She's going to have like a 6-inch reach advantage. So that's something that's going to be dangerous in most fights. But Andrade, I think, just like the Korean Zombie, is a fighter that just doesn't care what you do. She's going to come towards you. She's going to come at you. And she's not going to stop until she gets her hands on you. And she doesn't really get finished off. So I think, you know, she needs to get a little bit of a quicker starter than she did against Nama Yunus in her last fight. But I like her to do that. I like her to come in strong here. And I like her to take this win over Chookagian. Probably going to go the distance. FanDuel's all about it being a long-term you know, fight here going all the way. So I'm going to go with her. And you get the double shot at better odds at her winning by KO, TKO, or points. So we'll see how that goes tomorrow.
All right, so I think Seager just did it again, a two-run shot, his fifth home run of the postseason, second home run tonight. It's now 7-2, Dodgers, they're rolling in the seventh, a two-run blast. Lucky for me, I got the Dodgers and Astros tonight. I've been on fire hitting these baseball games. Morenci's next with Sports Rage. What do you think of the Astros winning again and the Dodgers saving face tonight after they were down 2-0, Gabe?
I don't think much enough is being made of the fact that Will Smith hit a home run off a dude named Will Smith. And what's even crazier is they're both white. You know, like, honestly, like, it's got to be the first time in baseball history that, like, a batter faced a hitter with the same name. I got to believe it, or at least hit a home run. Will Smith versus Will Smith. Yeah, Dodgers just adds a little bit more insurance. And, you know, we got high drama in the baseball playoffs that have kind of been flying under the radar with everything else that's going on in the sports world. I actually do think Houston are going to come all the way back now. You know, I heard Randy Cross many years ago talk about, you know, Joe Montana and Steve Young. He was talking about a quarterback situation. He said, you know, when you're a quarterback in the NFL, you're the man until you're not the man. And you know, in gambling and in baseball, it's the same thing. You're hot until you're not, right? And everything Tampa did, Scotty, worked. They caught everything. They hit everything. They cashed in. Great pitching. Great defense. Great plays. You know, Margot's flipping over freaking walls and stuff.
Right.
Now what's happening? They're booting baseballs. They're striking out. Wild pitches. Pass balls.
Right.
You know, I don't know. They're falling apart at the wrong time, and Houston's peaking at the right time.
And
I think
they're
the Astros
ice cold.
Beat them.
And they're ice cold. They can't hit anymore. They're hitting a couple home runs here or there, but they're not hitting any other time. They're not getting guys on base or anything. All right, Morenci, have a great weekend. Check out Sports Rage next and get all my Pain Day pros at PharrellOnTheBench.com. All the colleges there, the UFC, the boxing, all of it's there. Have a kick-ass weekend. See you Monday at 4 on Coast to Coast. Shake out.
Hey, everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.